The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Larkin, the Honorable Louise Dovray Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is Tuesday, May 11th. The first matter on our court's calendar this morning is Minnesota Sporting Clays Association versus National Casualty Company. Counsel, I know you're both familiar with our rules, and even though we are appearing via Zoom today, our argument procedures are the same. You will each have 15 minutes to make your argument. Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal should you choose to use it. It's important you state your name and the party you represent when you begin your arguments because they are being recorded. If at any time you have problems with audio or video, please raise your hand or otherwise indicate that to us. We've had very good experience with the Zoom format and expect that that will continue today. So with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Bjorkman, Judge Larkin, may it please the court, counsel. I'm Corey Anderson, and I represent appellant Minnesota Sporting Clay Association in the appeal of the final decision by the district court on appellant's motion and respondent's cross motion for summary judgment. As with cross motions, there are no fact issues. Accordingly, this court has jurisdiction to review the district court's interpretation of whether respondent's insurance policy provides MSC with coverage as a question of law and thus de novo. Specifically, the district court erred in failing to interpret the applicable policy language of personal and advertising injury consistent with the terms of the policy, and thus improperly held that respondents had no duty to defend MSC in the underlying lawsuit. Polaris was clear in specifically holding that in the absence of controlling language in the policy, advertising injury coverage should apply to claims of injury only when those alleged injuries arose out of advertising activity. While the Continental policy in that case defined advertising injury to include four offenses during the course of advertising activities, the policy at issue with National Casualty Company does not. Here, there is no absence of controlling language. The policy language is clear and does not require in anywhere advertising activity, just any publication of material.
Yeah, Ms. Anderson, if I could just stop you there for a moment. I mean, it seems to me this really isn't an advertising injury case at all. That really has to do with claims that would be qualified as personal injury, which is how I read subsets A through E of the policy definition. And I agree with you, it doesn't appear that any of those A through E require that an advertisement be involved. So if that's true, does the Polaris three-part analysis apply here?
That's an excellent question, Judge. That was one of the points I was going to make. In looking at coverage, of course, the court has to look at the entire policy. And somehow, I do think to an extent that we got off the train track a little bit, focusing in on the subsection D requiring this advertising activity. But if you look at, for example, 14 subsection A, that would make no sense whatsoever to require false arrest to have an element of advertising activity. So to that extent, I don't disagree that A through E are more along the lines of personal injury that don't require this element of the Polaris framework, if you will. And I think that's where the crux of the matter is that Polaris, I don't think ever was intended to be a concrete here's the three things you need to prove, like a McDonnell Douglas test, for example, with discrimination. I think it's a framework of interpreting an insurance policy. And yes, to that extent, personal and advertising injury is one of these seven offenses in this policy. The only F and G require advertisement. So I would agree that A through E are more aligned with the personal injury aspect of the policy. However, because the insurer put those two terms together in a specific meaning, I think that's where we looked at it as, you know, here's these three factors under Polaris. So if we do go under that line, like I was mentioning, the insurance policy that NCC wrote is certainly a contract of adhesion. And had NCC or National Casualty Company desired to make this any publication of material that are that is an advertisement, they could have done so, but they chose not to do so. It's any publication of material, including but not limited to oral, written, televised, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, if we look at the underlying counterclaims of Caribou Gun Club against MSC, which triggered this request for the duty to defend, not indemnify, just the duty to defend, that's where we look at whether or not the facts of the counterclaims as applied to the policy terms provide that coverage should be had. And again, in Minnesota, an insurer has a duty to defend even if coverage is arguable as to one claim. Any ambiguities must be resolved in favor of the insured.
So, counsel, as I read the counterclaims, they seem to all flow from disparaging statements that Minnesota Sporting Clays made about Caribou's failure to make its contractual payment of $3,800. If that's true, doesn't the breach of contract exclusion bar coverage?
So, no, Your Honor. So the claims against MSC. So first of all, there's no breach of contract claim by Caribou against MSC. So we're not.
Well, counsel, I understand that, but don't the statements that allegedly interfered with the contract all flow from your client's statements about Caribou's being in breach of contract? So don't they relate to a contract breach, albeit not a breach caused by your client?
So the statements that were made, and there's several, they were both board meeting statements to the public. They were board minutes made to the public. And then there's a Facebook post or two that were made publicly. The issue at hand is Minnesota Sporting Clays was announcing to the public, to thousands of people, that Caribou Gun Club doesn't pay their debts. You guys paid for the shoot, you paid your fees, but it never came back to Minnesota Sporting Clays. So these guys aren't honorable. They're not, you know, up and up.
Can you explain what happened? What do you mean they paid their fees, but they didn't pay their fees? I mean, sure. Was it a dispute over that the fees were increased or, and then the contract was, and if this is in the record, I mean, the contract was with the National Association then, or?
Yes, Your Honor. So the National Association provides that every state has like a state association. And it's a way of governing this whole shooting sport issue. It's like golf with shotguns, essentially, is one way to look at it. So in order to shoot at a place like Caribou, so in order to go there, Caribou needs to be a member in good standing with this entity. Minnesota Sporting Clays, they're like a middleman, if you will. The whole purpose there is to solicit, you know, get people excited about this sport, get people.
Yeah, no. I understand yep. all that, but who are the payments to go to, and who was, so the agreement was just with the National
Correct.
Association, and then the payments were made or they weren't made, or was a dispute over amount? I mean, it was really difficult for me to figure that out.
Sure. So when a shooter goes to a shoot, they pay, let's say, $100. Of that $100 that they pay to Caribou Gun Club, Caribou Gun Club is contracted between it and the national entity to pay the national entity a certain portion of whatever that $100 was, and to pay Minnesota Sporting Clays, the state part, the state dues part of that $100. And then Caribou retains the rest. So what happens is, or the whole crux of the argument was, Caribou Gun Club said, we're not recognizing Minnesota Sporting Clays as the Minnesota entity. We're going to, we're not going to pay you this $3,500 or $3,800.
Okay. Okay.
You.
So the National Association got its fees and, but the Minnesota did not.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So then let me ask you another question. The district court judge just decided this case on the basis of proximate cause under the Polaris test. And so can we get into other issues here? So if we agree on that one piece with your client, then what's the proper recourse then to remand?
I think you can look at it all, Your Honor, because it is de novo. There are no, it was cross motions for summary judgment, so there's no disputed fact. The record is literally all before the court. And I think the parties briefed the whole thing from beginning to end, if you will. And so we do think it's appropriate if this court, goes past that first where the district court kind of stopped. We do believe it's proper for this court to keep going and come to a final resolution.
And then I know that the counterclaims, they weren't for defamation. They were for intentional interference and intentional tort. So how does that fit with the intentional acts exclusion in the policy?
So some of them, a couple of different ways, Your Honor. The deceptive trade practices, the fourth count, does not require any sort of intent, if you will. I think that the Caribou Gun Club made it clear in its pleadings that it was its opinion, since it didn't pay Caribou Gun Club, that it didn't pay MSC, that MSC is a hot mess. In other words, their point is like they didn't know what they were doing. So I think that even if we look at a couple of the counts that might require intent, the fourth count, deceptive trade practices, under which they say MSC made public statements, Facebook posts, tortious acts, and all of those things that disparaged its reputation. The crux of the entire counterclaims, Caribou was upset because MSC told every shooter in Minnesota that Caribou didn't honor its payments to the club, to the Minnesota Sporting Clay Association.
And so that, Ms. Anderson, that sort of begs the question in my mind. Again, it seems like the gist of all of the counterclaims was that this was intentional conduct, and it was intentional conduct telling the world that your client was in breach of a contractual obligation, or that Caribou was in breach of a contractual obligation. I have a hard time getting around the policy exclusions. Why am I wrong about that?
So I couldn't find any case law interpreting a policy exclusion under the breach of contract that had to do with a third party contract. MSC is not a party to that contract. That's why, to some extent, and hands were tied, because it didn't have this ability to say, here's the contract that the two parties signed. It just wasn't.
But didn't it bring an action to collect on that debt? I mean, it had to have had a legal claim, wasn't it, based on contract?
So it did, but there's no counterclaims against, so MSC is not seeking, I hear what you're saying. And I think kind of to get back, MSC is not seeking coverage under that for that lawsuit. It's strictly the counterclaims against MSC that we're seeking coverage under. Those do not include any breach of contract by MSC. So in other words, Caribou isn't saying MSC breached a contract with us. They're saying National did. And what they're saying is just that MSC made all these public statements that, in their opinion, were untrue and that disparaged their, they advertised to the world that Caribou didn't pay what was, what they were owed. Or to take it a step further, Caribou is you could interpret it as Caribou is not a upstanding business. And there is some case law that says, look, when you're saying some business doesn't pay their debt or isn't financially sound or whatever people read into it, that is exactly the situation that we find ourselves in. That's the disparagement that's quite clearly covered under the subsection D of any publication that disparages another or that it disparages one.
Right. Thank you, counsel. You will have an opportunity to further respond on that or some other points during your rebuttal argument. Thank you. So now, counsel for respondent, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Alan Tritch on behalf of respondents, National Casualty Company and K&K Insurance Group. I'd like to start off by just clarifying some of the factual background based on the judge's questions during appellant's opening. As it relates to the breach of contract, it's important to understand the parties' relations in this case, more particularly the underlying action that Minnesota Sporting Clays asserted against Caribou and then Caribou asserted counterclaims against MSCA. And importantly there, with respect to a breach of contract, I don't have the direct citation for you right now, but to the judge's question earlier, MSCA did plead in their complaint against Caribou that the bid that Caribou submitted included paying target fees directly to Minnesota Sporting Clays Association. There was absolutely a contract that existed. In addition to that bid, it was linked to the National Sporting Clays Association's rules and regulations, which those rules and regulations provided that the gun club that was hosting the event was to pay target fees to both the National Association and the local association, which in this case was the Minnesota Sporting Clays Association. So to the extent that there's a question of contract, it absolutely existed. To the extent that Caribou disputed the validity of it or the application of it as it related to target fees owed to Minnesota Sporting Clays is really what the underlying action was about. That said, going back to the Polaris opinion and how it applies to this case, this absolutely is a question of advertising injury.
Hold on a second there, because the policy here is very different from the one in Polaris. For whatever reason, your client has combined personal and advertising injury. So explain to me how a wrongful eviction can ever arise from an advertisement.
So this particular policy was for advertising and personal injury. Basically, it took advertising injury and expanded it to include if there was any personal or bodily injury that was sustained as a result of the advertising injury, then the coverage would also...
What language are you looking at for that? I'm sorry, I don't mean to be quite so argumentative here.
Yeah,
but I don't see it. It looks like what your client did was say, we're covering personal injury, and here's the kinds of personal injury we're covering. And we're also covering advertising injury set out in paragraphs F and G of the definition of personal and advertising injury. I mean, the word advertisement only appears in F and G. So just talk me through that.
So advertisement is a specifically defined term in the policy. And as it relates to the coverage under section 14 for the specific advertising and personal injury coverage, the term personal and advertising injury is defined as, and then it includes that heading that describes personal advertising injury. And the only difference there between here and Polaris is that at the end of the terms in Polaris, it said arising out of advertising activity. Here, it doesn't say that at the end of this.
Well, so, isn't that significant? And the word personal doesn't appear in the Polaris policy.
Your Honor, the only...
eviction doesn't appear, and neither does slander or libel. I mean, you have to admit that even though it says advertising injury, we're still governed by the actual policy in this case, correct?
Absolutely, yes. So all that Polaris was describing with that first element or prong is that there has to be a causal connection between the advertisement or here, as appellant now argues for the first time on reply, publication. So if we're looking at 14...
But publication is in the definition. But at any rate, but let's. I've got another question here. What's the difference? Now, this is just a duty to defend case, because the case itself, and as far as I understand, at least I haven't seen anything in any of the papers saying that they're asking for actual indemnity. So what's the difference in the standard between duty to defend and indemnity?
I mean, very little.
And how does that play into our consideration of this case?
Yes, Your Honor, very little. So if essentially for duty to defend, it's a little more broad. They both consider the factual allegations in the pleadings. However, when it comes to duty to defend, as cited in our brief, the court, when determining whether coverage applies and the duty to defend kicks in, can consider facts that are outside of the pleading if they're submitted in any of the underlying allegations for that case. So here, the reason why there's a slight difference or why appellant was focusing on the fact of the duty to defend, it being more broad, ultimately, when we're looking at the pleading and the factual allegations outside of it to determine whether there's a duty to defend, it's essentially the same because the court can consider those additional facts. And tying back into the last question as it related to this personal and advertising injury, for the policy itself, for oral or written publication in any manner, libel, slander, or disparages a company's goods, products, or services. So for the first prong of Polaris as it relates to a causal connection, if it's not advertisement, if there's a difference between how either the policy defines advertisement or if we're just ignoring Polaris in terms of that, then publication would be the applicable term here, as appellant suggests in their reply brief. Publication is not defined in the policy, which means that we would have to apply the general common definition of publication, which is dissemination of information or sale to the public of some sort of information.
Well, you mean the word publication itself? Publication in defamation law is any kind of communication to anybody between two individuals. And are you saying this has a different meaning then? And then where does that arise from?
I'm saying that the policy does not define publication. And when the policy doesn't define publication, we don't apply terms from cases. We apply the general common definition of publication. So
when you're talking about libel and slander, and then what dictionary definition are you referring to?
I'm referring to the Webster's Dictionary because appellant didn't cite to anything in their brief when they were relying on the term publication. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that we're considering the term publication, once again, it is not applicable directly to a case that's considering libel or slander. It has to do with if the term is not defined in the policy, case law provides that the court, rather than interpreting it otherwise, is to apply the common ordinary definition of that. So here we don't have that in the briefings. So if the court wants to apply some other general common definition of publication, that's okay. The point is that there has to be...
So what's an oral publication then? Because it talks about oral, the word oral. So if you're talking about publishing in the sense of like a book publisher, an advertisement is published in a newspaper or online, how does that fit with the word oral?
Well, applying it to this case, I suppose the only publications that Caribou alleges Minnesota Sporting Clays made were in a boardroom during their board meetings where they were talking about being owed monies under a bid and the rules of the National Sporting Clays Association that Caribou owed them money. So to the extent that they're making that statement in a room full of people, appellant's argument would be that that's a publication.
And here, what's your argument, though?
My argument is the same as what it was in my brief, which is essentially that to the extent that there was any sort of publication or dissemination of that information, It was made only to the members of the club that existed there, so it wasn't to the general public. And to the extent that it was released to anyone outside of the people in that room, it was done so at the direction of the National Sporting Clays Association, which was specifically pled in Caribou's complaint, stating that the National Sporting Clays Association told the Minnesota Sporting Clays Association that they had to publish all meeting minutes and disseminate those to all of the members of the Minnesota Sporting Clays Association.
Mr. Tritch, it seems to me that your response goes more to the defense of the merits of the claim than the question of, is there a duty to defend here, because there's arguably coverage. Assume for the moment that we disagree with the proposition that this isn't, there needed to be an advertisement here, and that sections A through E relate to personal injury. Assuming that we go that direction, what is your strongest argument in favor of affirming the district court's determination that coverage is not owed here?
So it's twofold, Your Honor. First and foremost, we have to apply the definition, the second prong of Polaris, or remove Polaris from the equation. We still have to apply the definition of what appellant seeks to have here for coverage, which is a publication of material that slanders or libels a company or disparages their goods, products, or services. Here, Caribou did not allege any libel or slander. There was nothing in the entire underlying complaints that had anything to do with libel or slander. The only thing that Minnesota Sporting Clays is trying to assert here for coverage is the term disparagement. However, once again, Caribou did not allege there was any disparagement of its goods, products, or services. Rather, Caribou specifically alleged that there was only disparagement of its reputation and credibility within the industry that it works, just like anyone else in any creditor situation when they don't pay a bill. To the extent that other people know that they didn't pay their bills, they're going to claim that those other people in that industry are going to look disfavorably upon them. That does not mean that those statements were directly tied to or related in any way to Caribou's goods, products, or services. Second of all,
couldn't the assertion that this company doesn't pay their bills be considered slander?
I haven't seen any case law, and appellant hasn't produced any case law that would support that. There weren't any allegations in the underlying complaint that actually tied any of that together. So that'd be raised for the first time right now. As it relates to that, though, looking at the exclusion that Your Honor brought up earlier for the breach of contract, there's an important distinction here, and the court had addressed this earlier, which is that all of Minnesota Sporting Clays Association's statements and all of the allegations and the underlying pleadings have to do with the breach of contract. Everything that Minnesota Sporting Clays Association was asserting was stating that Caribou did not pay monies that it owed to Minnesota Sporting Clays Association. So the mere fact that Caribou didn't allege a breach of contract against Minnesota Sporting Clays doesn't defeat the breach of contract exclusion, because the whole point is that Caribou's complaint arose out of statements that Minnesota Sporting Clays made about Caribou breaching a contract. And if Caribou didn't believe or didn't want that contract to exist, obviously they wouldn't be asserting a breach of contract claim against Minnesota Sporting Clays Association. Finally, as it relates to the other two exclusions in terms of knowing violation of rights of another material published with knowledge of its falsity, if the breach of contract exclusion does not apply here for any reason, that those statements did not arise out of a breach of contract and the claims in the entire underlying action were not arising out of a breach of contract, then all three of Caribou's claims are specifically tied to stating that Minnesota Sporting Clays had knowledge of and knew that it was making false statements about monies that Caribou Gun Club owed to it. And specifically, and that included the Minnesota Deceptive Trade Practices Act, where Caribou Gun Club pled that Minnesota Sporting Clays did intentionally and knowingly interfere with Caribou's reasonable expectation, including but not limited to violating the Minnesota Deceptive Trade Practices Act. So all three of Caribou's claims are intentional torts that they're asserting against Minnesota Sporting Clays Association. So to the extent that all of those claims did not arise out of Minnesota Sporting Clays statements that were breach of contract, then all of those statements would otherwise fall under the exclusion for publishing something that they knew they shouldn't have been publishing because they should have known that that didn't exist. So to the extent that this court either upholds or affirms the district court with respect to the first prong as not having proximate causation, otherwise, we respectfully request that this court find that there's still no coverage because it doesn't fall within the definitional parameters of the policy because there wasn't a disparagement or any allegation of a disparagement of Caribou's goods, products, or services. And if the court finds that there was, there's an exclusion for breach of contract and exclusion for publishing information with knowledge of its falsity.
Do we, as an appellate court, if we were to disagree with the district court's ruling on proximate cause, then shouldn't we remand to the district court for consideration of the other issues?
You should, Your Honor. You would remand with directions to the district court to provide whatever this court has directions for that court to then subsequently follow, whether you choose to do it in dicta or with direct information, because this is de novo. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Anderson, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
There we go.
It happens all the time.
So sorry. So I just wanted to touch on a few things that Mr. Trich brought up and that were the kind of questions that were asked. I think the key one is when asked about the difference between a duty to defend and a duty to indemnify, I guess we have to vigorously disagree with his take on that. We're not asking respondents to indemnify us, in other words, to pay whatever it is that we may or may not have had to pay in this lawsuit. This is strictly a duty to defend, which is a much lower threshold. It just gets us in the door of getting, you know, of an insurer getting to, you know, pay for the insured when sued. And so that's where it comes to if any part of the cause of action is arguably within the scope of coverage, the insurer must defend. And I think we're getting we're kind of losing the broad scope of this is just an initial threshold. Whether or not they have to defend. Now they could, through the course of the litigation and defending the insured, explore all of these possible affirmative defenses or, you know, maybe a motion to dismiss or whatnot. But we've got to at least get that coverage acknowledged first. The burden is on the insurer at this point to prove that the claim clearly falls outside coverage afforded by the policy.
And why hasn't National Casualty done that when they've pointed us to exclusions that seem like they might apply to me because this is all about statements revolving around a breach of contract. And it suggests that these were not inadvertent statements, that they were intentional statements designed to interfere with contractual relationships. Why would we find coverage here?
So Caribou Gun Club, so they allege that MSC's conduct didn't merely interfere with Caribou's contract with the National or any other contract. Caribou also alleged that MSC disparaged its reputation and credibility and interfered with future business prospects. The very nature of that is that there is not an existing contract for those claims. So if it goes back to if that one claim can survive, then the insurer has a duty to defend. Now, they may resolve and say, okay, well, we don't have to indemnify you because we find these things happen. At this threshold, is any single claim arguably fall under the policy? So from MSC's perspective, you're right. Let me back up. We kind of got talking about the definition of publication of material. And you're right. There is no definition of publication. I think it goes.
Wait, can I interrupt, Jack, just a minute? Because I'd like to hear your response to Mr. Trich's argument that that in that paragraph 14D, it has to, the libel or slander has to tie into the goods, products, or services.
Yeah.
And so how do we deal with that when it's like you didn't pay me? I mean, that's arguably not goods, products, or services.
Sure. And I think that it's taking it too narrow of what the, I think it's taking the claims against MSC too narrow. If you look at Minnesota being a notice pleading state, you look at all the facts and all the allegations that were in the counterclaims, Caribou Gun Club argued alleged that MSC published material that slanders or libels or disparages, they don't have to use a magic term. So you kind of asked about, yeah, the word slander may not be in the lawsuit against MSC, but it's what was the insurance company put on notice that the allegations were about.
How does it tie? No, I think Mr. Tritch's point was, how does it tie into goods, products, or services?
It's absolutely
the alleged disparagement.
It's absolutely services, Your Honor. So if MSC says Caribou doesn't pay us, therefore they can't host a shoot, hey, membership, go to a different gun club. You can't, if you go to this gun club, you're supporting a place that has services that are less than up and up. They don't provide all the services that they're supposed to. It's directly defaming or disparaging the services that they provide. And that's why they say, look, we were going to host, should have hosted these huge, and they are worldwide events, but they're saying because of what MSC did and things that they said, which, you know, it caused that not to happen, and they lost money and they were disparaged and their reputation was hurt. And all of those things. And again, it goes, the core of the matter, a duty to defend is, did anything, to answer the services kind of question, did anything that was alleged against MSC allege that there was defamation or disparagement or slander against the services that Caribou Gun Club can or should provide? And right. If there's any question, it goes in MSC's favor at the duty to defend part.
All right. Unless there are further questions, Ms. Anderson, your time has expired. And I appreciate seeing nothing. I appreciate both counsel's arguments today. They were helpful to the court, and we will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.